This is Due By Friday, the weekly challenge podcast from Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, make a vlog.
What a good season of Top Chef. I know we've gotten many comments on Twitter. People are mad that we're not doing Top Scallops, and sorry to lose them as a customer. Always hard to turn away a paying customer, but life. I just to briefly touch on it, it's a great fucking season. Did you guys watch the pilot?
No, not yet.
Can I don't feel like I'm spoiling anything, but so basically they bring on 8 chefs and they introduce them all, and you're going in your head, you're like, wait a minute, that's only 8 people. That's not enough. And they have them do like a challenge where one of them, you know, like a quick fire where like chef test where one of them's on the bottom. And then they bring out the other 8 chefs, and it's 8 returning people, and they picked 8 awesome people to come back. It's like 8 people. They're not 8 crazy dinglings. They're like 8 solid people from other seasons who I genuinely am excited to see more of.
Is Richard there?
No, there's no... So far, there's not been a sighting of Richard Blaze, but I feel that he has a semi-permanent spot as a guest judge, so hopefully he'll be back judging. But
they had that one guy that I like, the Jim Halpern-looking guy from the Marcel season. I like him. What's his name? Tom Duda? What's his name? I forget his name.
If there's one thing we learned from doing a whole Top Chef podcast, it's that we shouldn't try to remember the contestants' names.
Well, I have a very bold, very brave statement, which is that we're very excited because, hey, new season of Top Chef. And this is amazing. We get Top Chef and Top Dress at the same time. Very exciting. And I didn't finish watching it because the Shamus.com copy that I had died 39 minutes in. So, and my daughter was so upset that the African-American guy was in trouble. She made us turn it off anyway. Mm-hmm. But it was so contrived, the whole like, hey, the 8 previous contestants are backstage. I hate the watching somebody else on a TV screen on TV thing. And then there's all the shade throwing and the trash talk and all that kind of stuff. But what is it? Do you like the gimmick?
Oh, I love the gimmick. Yeah. I mean, so I like Top Chef. I think Top Chef is we've talked about this ad nauseum, but like,
Top Chef is one of the great things in reality TV. There are probably more. I'm just pulling this out of my ass. There are more above average seasons of Top Chef than there are of Project Runway.
Even a bad season, like last season that we did the podcast about, was a notably bad season of Top Chef. And even a bad season of Top Chef, like I was watching this one and I was just like, Veronica and I were just so fucking happy. I was so happy watching this show. I was like, why is all television not Top Chef? Like, there's no excuse for everything to not be this good. It's so good. I was just so happy that it's back. So I think the game design on Top Chef is just like brilliant. Like, I love how they structure this. I think like meeting the new people, that's kind of part of the thrill of the season. You're trying to pick out the dinglings, of which there I did not find a dingling this season. Do you think there's one?
I need to go back and watch
the smiling
it again.
The southern guy who smiles all
I'm
the
gonna,
time.
I'm gonna reveal something about my family, and don't put this in the show unless you put it in the show. But you know, I am genuinely excited when certain episodes of certain TV shows come on, and there are certain programs that we save to watch as a family because it's a tradition, and two of those are Top Dress and Top Chef. And here's a sad thing about me is I sit there and I like pay attention to the show. It's really weird. And I don't really need to. They'll explain everything to me. But my daughter starts running around. She's playing on the yoga ball. She wants to cut something out with paper. And I'm like, can we please focus on the Top Chef? So I'm frequently very distracted when I'm watching it. But I'll go with it again. I agree with you, though. Would you say gameplay? Yeah, the way they structure stuff is really good.
The game
design.
People
gotta stop trying to make 3 things. Stop trying to make 3 things. Don't do that.
Oh, well, they set them up to – that was part of the thing was like how – you know, it's like how aware of your limitations are you as a chef.
But should one of them be pasta from scratch?
But she won.
Yeah.
She had the best dish, so yeah.
I need to watch it again.
Yeah.
I need to watch it again.
Anyway, but I think she won anyway. But anyway, I love it. I love that you get the nervousness and the excitement of the new people, plus like familiar faces that you care about, and you're like rooting for them, and it's fun to hear them comment on the new people, like they're trying to pick out the dinglings just like you are as the viewer. I just love the whole thing. I've got the Top Dress, the Top Chef, plus Robot Ladies. Mm-hmm. What, I mean,
Robot Ladies is outstanding.
Oh.
We talked about that. We just recorded Reconcilable Differences last night. It's 3 hours long, and an hour and a half is talking about.
Was John Yay. Complaining about the command line interface that they have for the robots?
Yes. No, I don't have a code like that. Capital letters.
I still haven't seen the season finale, and it's driving me a little bit crazy, and I've had no food this morning, just on my second energy drink. I just want to know who the Man in Black is.
Yeah. Wait, why don't we... I want to watch it again. Let's watch it together.
We should.
What do you do? Wait, do we have to work today?
We do. You have meetings today.
Oh.
You have... Yay. You've got this company...
You should watch it during meetings.
Can I ask you a question? If I get the little Siri balls that go in your ear,
yeah,
and I have a Siri ball in... Could I be watching a Westworld and no one would know?
Wait, mm-hmm. What?
Do you know what I mean? The little apple?
Like, the kind of thing Hillary Clinton would wear in the debates. One
of
those things.
That's
yeah.
proven. That's rock solid. She had a transceiver.
Well, she's getting live. She's getting live faxes from the pizza sex dungeon the whole time.
Right. Because, yeah, they're like, listen, I'm working really hard in this debate and I'm going to need 6 fresh pizzas afterwards if you catch my meaning. Hot, fresh pizzas.
And a little bit of Childhood Strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's where she gets a lot. You know, a lot of her money comes from corporate speeches, Goldman Sachs, and sex trafficking in a tunnel under a pizza restaurant. The evidence is there. You just got to go in and prove it. This Alex, who's the other Alex? Alex Jones. He says, hey, they got to get in there. You just got to get in there and go investigate this for yourself.
If there's one thing that this election exposed, and that I think we can say with confidence, it's that whatever the DNC puts its mind to, they execute it with the utmost competence and secrecy, and no one would ever find out about it. It's the perfect criminal empire. I mean, they're masterminds.
I heard this is in John Podesta's emails. I heard there are numerous exchanges about a sexy kid pizza. I heard there's all kinds of evidence that's just right there. It's in plain sight.
Right. Well, yeah, because you got the tunnels. You go into the tunnels.
We don't want John Podesta to know about that. You just heads up, John. Just a quick update on the child trafficking ring underneath the pizza restaurant. Just want to let you know everything is 5x5. We're doing great with that. We're moving a lot of product. And we made a tunnel. That's the kind of thing you put in an email to the head of your Democratic National Committee.
I learned a great Pizzagate fact. I've just been reading about it this week. And so this is like one of the like instigating factors of Pizzagate was like, so this guy, this like one of these like right wing like nut jobs goes in there with his camera and he starts doing like a periscope from, this is weeks ago, right, from the pizza place. And he's like looking around on his periscope, being incredibly creepy and conspicuous. Everyone in there knows what he's doing. And he apparently, there's like a back room with ping pong, with the titular ping pong. Mm. And he takes, not to be ping pong, but he takes his camera into the back room where there's like a child's birthday party going on. And you can imagine a creepy man from the internet periscoping from his phone, just walking right into a kid's birthday party. The logical thing would be that you would politely ask him to leave. And not film it live on the internet.
Could you please not live broadcast my child's birthday? Also, sir, why are you dressed as a clown?
You understand everyone on all of these people online, they were like, oh my God, it's like, we've proven it. Like, why else would they have asked us to leave?
Are they saying it's like a gingerbread house? Like you're the witch and you have the kids come into the oven? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Why, lure them in with parties?
Yeah, but if you have nothing to hide, why wouldn't you want your daughter's birthday party at the ping pong pizza place being live streamed on Periscope by a bunch of gentlemen, anime enthusiasts from 4chan?
Do they have something to hide, Max? Why wouldn't they want that to be transparent?
No, I mean, listen.
You must have something to hide.
It's not even a special birthday party for your young daughter if 4chan is not watching it live.
Right. If a child ages in a pizza parlor, does anybody hear it? Yeah, that's I hadn't thought of it from that. It's my understanding from all my numerous listenings to Alex Jones that I feel like this started with satanic symbols, as so many things in the last 30 years. Didn't it start with what appeared to be satanic symbols?
Yes. So the my understanding there is this is kind of what blew the whole case open is the ping pong pizza place. Part of their nefarious plan is that they give a lot of money to St. Jude's Research Hospital, for which they received some sort of plaque or banner with a heart symbol on it. And that's obviously, as everyone knows, international symbol of child sex trafficking. And the heart is just a classic case of an occult symbol that means that you're selling children into sex slavery.
Oh, I mean, the kids at St. Jude's, they don't pay for anything, not travel, not anything. That just that doesn't add up.
Plus, they get to make a wish.
Yeah. I want to meet Michael Jordan.
Mm.
You know, it's a sad state of affairs. But people, it's just like Westworld, Max. It's all just hiding in plain sight. There's nothing hidden. You just walk in there with a camera and you can uncover a tunnel.
Alex, what do you think on the outside of our building? We have like an awning, like a movie awning with like a sign that we can change to say whatever. And I'm just thinking that maybe I don't want anyone to think that anything sort of untoward is going on here. Nope. Do you think we should change it to say not a child sex ring? Just to be, because I think
have anything to hide.
I think that would clear it up for people.
Well, you know, I think it makes a lot of sense. As you know, it is very difficult to start a small business. And the most difficult small business is a restaurant. Most fail in under 6 months. So I think if you want the extra edge, you're going to have to do two things. Number one, you're going to have just very lightly disguised satanic symbols. That as a small business owner, I think they're going to tell you day one, you need to get some symbology on the walls. And then second, you need to dip your toe into a little bit of child trafficking.
You know, I just wanted to come here and talk about Lin-Manuel Miranda, and now I'm taking notes on the time code, like, all right, what can I keep in?
Now, who's that?
Is this the show? Is this the show right now that we're doing?
I don't know. Merlin, this week... You gave us a interesting challenge.
Oh, okay. You're throwing to me?
I thought it was pretty clear, but...
It's baseball players today. They got a lot of funny names.
All right, set that up one more time, Alex.
Okay.
You're going to be happy I made you do it again in editing.
Merlin, what was the challenge for this week?
Thanks, Alex. That's super that you're asking me. This week, it was my challenge, and my challenge was that the short challenge is make a vlog, and with some specificity, and I think we've all realized at this point, the point of the show is not to do the challenge or do it well, it's just to have a chance to be here, see also Groucho Marx. The full challenge is you got to make a vlog with a name, you have to shoot and post 3 episodes, and then, if possible, your last episode should be about why you're retiring from vlogging. But that was the basic challenge, and we all did the most important part, which is we made a vlog. And I didn't get to watch yours, you people's, until this morning, and I loved it. I loved it. So should I start lead the discussion here?
Well, I think at the end of last week's episode, I was very surprised to learn that you had a vlog, although like a lot of things you've done, you were doing this before there was like professional, you know, teens who were like professional vloggers. You were pretty, as I understand it, you were pretty early into the vlogging trend, but, what appeals to you about the format? Like what made you want to do it back then? You know, it felt to me like you sort of slipped back into it the easiest of the three of us.
Oh, well, I was going to interview you guys, but okay. Here's the thing.
Challenge. It's your show.
I was going to try and be a gracious host. Now I'm feeling all Slytherin. I have done 2 main video things, both of which felt ambitious in my head at the time. The first one was a thing I did called The Merlin Show with my friend Ben Durbin. We're now, parents at the same school. It's really cool. Our kids go to school together. But Ben, who, you know, lives near me, don't be creepy, he was the producer for this show that I did called The Merlin Show that was shot mostly... Well, he was working with Alex at the other Alex, the third Alex at what's it called? Pixel Core?
He was
like the guy at
He
Pixel
did
Core.
The whole. Alex Lindsay.
Alex Lindsay, yeah, right. And so I had a little space there. We worked together. And so I'm getting somewhere with this because this is the big story of this is what's easy and what's hard to me. Like, I'm always surprised by what's easy, what's difficult, what's easy and what's difficult about doing this. So back then, I mean, I bought a camera. I bought lav mics. This is 2000. six or seven, I think maybe 2007. And we bought all this equipment, and then he was editing it, and we put out two versions. I bought two Libsyn accounts. I had one for 720 and one for, I don't think we did 1080. We might have done 720 as our high one. But you would not believe what was involved with this. Shooting onto little video cassettes, having to capture that into, I'm pretty sure he was using Final Cut. Editing that, it was so much work to do that. And we eventually just had to kind of abandon it because, but I mean, I like what we did. Like, I interviewed some really cool people for it. It's my interview with John Roderick on that show, three-part, I think, or four-part interview, was basically essentially the pilot for what became Roderick on the Line years later, 4 or 5 years later. I got to meet Jonathan Coulton through doing that. There's all this great stuff that happened. But I was like, Ben and I were just like, this is just too much work. Even, you know, even setting aside that it was a cost center rather than a profit center. But then at one point I thought, you know, I need a little project. And so I thought I would do this daily thing called, and I called it Most Days. And basically I would just talk to the camera, and it had a certain kind of format to it. But it was really, it ended up being really fun to do. And the parts that I expected to be difficult were often very easy. And the parts that I thought would be easy were often very difficult. And that still continues to this day. So that ran for, I don't know, probably fewer than 20 episodes. And like most of the stuff I do, it had the audience that it had was modest, but the people seemed to enjoy it a lot. And so that's what I chose to do, was resuscitate that for 4 episodes for this.
I was a huge fan of the Merlin show, and it was fantastic. I'm wondering, though, with Most Days, that was kind of pre-Twitter, and you put it on, not pre-Twitter, but like the beginnings of people actually being on Twitter. And you didn't, you put your stuff on Vimeo, which is the, you know, I don't know what, it's the LaCroix of video services, whereas YouTube mm-hmm. is your Safeway sparkling water. You say it had a modest audience. Did you like interact with your fans at all, or what did you not, like about that?
Not too much. I mean, one way in which I suspect I think about these things a little bit, like the way y'all think about it with your games, is whether it's something like, and forgive me, I'm talking about myself, but whether it's something like You Look Nice Today, or something like Roderick on the Line, or something like these videos, I think it's very important to establish the rules for your world. And I don't always share my conception of what the rules for that world are with the other people involved, but I get to be the king of that world when I'm doing it on my own. So like, I think there should be a clear understanding about how much, a mostly clear understanding about how much the outside world has an impact on what you do and how much you do choose to interact and then have that be in the actual product. I'm not saying this very well, but like, for example, with You Look Nice Today, which is a podcast I used to do with two of my friends, like I always saw that in my head as looking like the animation style of Dr. Katz, Squiggle Vision. And it was three of us sitting around a table at a meeting where nobody else came to the meeting. And we were the three least important people who didn't really need to be at the meeting. And we were killing time until the important people showed up. I always had this vision of us at a too small, awkwardly sized table, like talking about these business projects that made no sense. And so with the Most Days, no, I didn't want to. I'm not really into the whole like comments and talking and promotion part of that. I just wanted it to be a place where I could just spew out a bunch of stuff and hone this one little kind of personality that I ended up really enjoying. I like the little personality of Most Days a lot. And it's actually not that far from how I actually am. I'm not really going anywhere with this. But no, it was really fun to do, and I actually enjoyed this a lot more than I expected.
Do you consider like your one-off videos, like the video about the butcher that everyone really loves, just like a thing that doesn't exist in the universe, and that's just you being, you know, when you used to be Merlin Mann?
Mm-hmm. Kind of. I like the idea of that. I think I get very, how do I say this in a civil way? I'm pretty fatigued I want to do a podcast about a thing I wrote on my blog. And then in my blog, we're going to talk about what we did on the podcast. And then we're going to like promote this other thing. I get why people do that. If you're doing that as a business, it's very important. But I find that tiresome, and it takes me out of the world. Like, you know, I like the idea of like, here's this little diarrhea of personality that you can take however you want. You certainly aren't compelled. And the point about Vimeo was Vimeo has better taste than YouTube. It was always a joy to use that app. It was like, the same way that I felt using Flickr, whatever, 10 years ago. It was so fun to use and beautiful to use and tasteful. And it didn't have a garish business model that got in the way. And the people who made video, people like, you know, Dallas and them, were they're total hippies about storytelling. They didn't even want certain kinds of videos on there. And so that made more sense to me. But did I answer your question? Not really.
No. Yeah, you did. I know there are some people from Columbia College who listen to this. I am the reason that you give your homework on Vimeo and not YouTube. You are welcome. All right, that's it. People need to know that.
All I'll say about the Vimeo YouTube thing is, like, I ultimately opted to go with YouTube, but I left my videos private because I didn't want anyone to find them. But
like unfindable?
Yeah, like unlisted, and then I just linked on my Twitter, and, you know, I'll probably delete those tweets shortly, just because I don't need anyone to look at me.
Well, it's also like, you know, if I'm going to really try at something, I want to really try at it. And if I'm not going to really try at it, I don't want to half-ass it. I don't want to fill up my Twitter stream with a bunch of links to stuff that I expect, you know, 150 people to look at. You know what I mean? Like, if I really, like, right. You know, I think when you decide to promote something, you've got to really put some wood behind the arrow and decide this is a thing you think is worth doing and has longevity. And it's like, this is a fun project, but it's
well,
nothing
that's,
like that.
I mean, I think about this all the time of, like, there is an economy of, like, how many times can you ask people to look at something that you've done? Like, you only get so many of those before it sort of loses all meaning, right? So the more times you link to things and ask people to look at them, the less each link is worth. So I do always think about there's sort of a conservation aspect of that. But the thing where with the YouTube versus Vimeo for me, you know, I struggle with this in almost every aspect of my life or my online life, I guess, which is there's always going to be a disparity between what the best services and the highest quality community and the place that you fit in and you want to be, which is Vimeo, and the place where your work will get noticed and where the people are. The people are never in the best place.
Mm-mm.
And if they are, it doesn't last for long. There was like a very brief moment where the people were on Twitter and Twitter was the best place, but that did not last for long. And now Twitter is becoming the worst place. And I feel like I have to be there because that's like where the people are.
Yeah.
I left YouTube or Facebook a long time ago because Facebook was never a good, Facebook was always
bad.
You don't
want them to fuck you.
I don't want to get fucked.
I really want to get off me and talk about you guys, but the only pin I want to put here is I would love to come back to the difficult and easy part because I think that has so much to do. The amount of effort you're willing to budget for a project like this, I think it's really important to know how much you want to put into this, and given the ambitions of what you want to do, this is not like just having a blog where you can just type something and put it up. I mean, there's a little bit of work involved and time involved with this, and I'd like to circle back to that because it's I don't know, it's I just think it's an interesting topic. What about you guys? What about who should we start with? Should we start with Alex, who I think is the clear winner in this?
I agree that Alex's videos came out the best.
I just followed all the rules, which is why I put these on YouTube just because I'm curious. I had like 10 subscribers. I'm like, who are these humans? I've never put anything on YouTube before. And I got like 3 comments in the middle of the night. They were nice, but I don't know how people find stuff. I haven't put it on Twitter yet.
Well, then I'm gonna voideer you here, Alex, because you're not gonna talk about yourself unless you're provoked, I think.
Yeah.
So Alex, you did a series. You did 3 videos. Your series is called Two-Headed Girl. And how would you, if people haven't seen it, how would you describe the vlog that you made and kind of what you were going for and what you put out?
I gave it a name because you told me to, and that's what my Tumblr has been called since I was like 16. And I wanted to get a video done quickly after work, and that's what I did. Yeah, I don't know. I did not go into this with like a thesis or. I thought the fun part was, and I kind of joke about this, but the fun part for me is like, what are the cool new toys that the kids are using for vlogging and stuff? Because
we gotta talk about equipment.
But like, I have
my budget so far, unless I find a way to amortize this, my budget so far is approximately $100 in equipment per episode.
Yeah, yeah.
I better get a second gorilla pod. That guy looks like Gollum uses those.
Well, here's the thing, Merlin. It's an investment because you buy it for this project, but then you have it for all the future video projects that you put on YouTube.
unless it just becomes a thing where I just buy a gorilla pod before I can do anything, it becomes like a fetish.
Can use it with your douche. But seriously, like we have all of this like amazing video equipment that we use when Cards goes to events and stuff like that. And I did think, like, what if I just shot something in 4K? But I kind of forgot how fun small like a guerrilla documentary making is, which is like what I went to school for, and it's like my first love, I guess. And not that this is reflected in any of the videos I put up, but I've just been having so much fun playing with my little gimbal that I got, and the apps that you can use to record videos are stunning, and you can tell again by
and let's be clear here, on your phone. I spent a whole day, I blew most of a day sitting on Slack, I think mostly the Relay Slack, just like, what should I do? Like, tell me, Mike, how should I shoot this? Because I'm used to doing it with my computer, and far and away, the best results I was going to get were going to come from doing something with my phone, and I had resistance to that.
Why?
I mean, I could have gotten my Canon out, but like, I don't really want to deal with that. It doesn't need to be that high resolution. Plus, how am I going to do a mic? And it was an all-in-one solution. You put this on the gimbal and you just roll. And it's like, that was very surprising to me.
I want to thank the Studio Neat guys for sending me a Glyph prototype, which has like saved my life. It's so good. I don't want to be the best camera is the one you have with you guy, but God, the first iPhone, I remember jailbreaking it to make it have video, and I still have some of those, and they're, oh God, they're just very upsetting. And this, like, just, I was playing with the 4K slow motion, and it's just so gorgeous, and you can tell when we take out, you know, a $10,000 camera and shoot in 4K, this is incredibly boring, but I don't think
it is. But on the other hand, I also really enjoy the quality of Max's, right? Which I'm sure we'll get to. But the quality in every way of Max's was, of course, outstanding. But like, I feel like this gets to this easy and difficult problem, which is like, in my case, I was feeling like, ugh, like, why did I do this challenge? I don't have anything to say. I don't think I'm as clever, funny, or useful as I was probably at one time. But like, I don't really want to do this, and I got to think about it, and I got to be clever, and like, that became resistance about gear, and that became resistance about the material. And honestly, it wasn't until I'd gotten the Osmo Mobile, but I finally got the GorillaPod with the little grabby. I bought the one with the little grabby on it, so you can put it on your phone. And I just started saying, look, let go and let God. Just start talking and see what happens. And like, it took me so much. Again, it's like I'm trying to break down a door that's already unlocked. And I was like, you know what? This is fun. I'm just going to sit down and do this. And having a de minimis amount of setup required. So basically, and then eventually what I got to, we've got to talk about this Osmo. I eventually got to where I stuck the Osmo into a roll of paper towels. I pointed it at myself. I would shoot until I fucked up. And then I'd shoot until I fucked up. And usually on the third or fourth try, I could do 3 to 5 minutes that I was okay with. And I said, stop there. Do not perfect this. Stop there. It's like Christina Aguilera and her vocals. I got to stop with this take. I hit the dingus. I save it to the roll. I hit the other dingus. I hand off to my Mac. And that's it. with, you know, this amazing 720p video, I'm using the selfie cam because I'm an animal. But like, that was astonishing. It's like, once I actually, it's such a classic story. Once I sat down and did it, it wasn't that difficult and it was fun. And if I'd let myself fret any more than I did about the equipment, I would not have anything to show you right now.
Mike Hurley told me, like, almost to the point of anger, just use the front, just use the FaceTime camera, just do it. And it was kind of, it was fine. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not Max's 50mm Nikon lens, but I was still like just pleasantly surprised because I've never recorded anything with that camera. Oh, this is so boring.
But if it's the medium. I mean, if you want to buy, if you like reading, you know, Richie Rich comic books, you don't need it printed on Johnny Ive paper. Like, that's that pulpiness like suits the medium in some ways. I mean, it's not going to be a collector's item, but I think for these kinds of personal videos and these silly, like, we're all obviously a little bit like self-effacing. We're like almost embarrassed to be doing this. And I think it suits the medium that we're not trying to, like, you know, overshoot.
I think talking about like the medium is really interesting because I haven't really watched YouTube in years. And I know I bring up my childhood almost every single episode because this is just like my weekly therapy now. And I grew up watching the Vlogbrothers and just and people reviewing Apple products. And now like returning to that and watching what is he? Gollum, who sells his stuff.
Don't get me in trouble.
I literally had never heard of this guy, but it's I don't know the way YouTube.
He's
works,
so famous.
He is. I know that.
Who the fuck are you talking about? What?
Casey Neistat.
I could talk about Casey Neistat.
Yeah, he is super, super interesting. How did you find out about this guy?
Well, I've known Casey. I've known his work for a long time because he made these very viral, popular kind of dumb videos over the years of the like Chinese people waiting in line for an iPhone in New York. That was like a false conspiracy theory that like Gruber and other people posted about. There was like him like skiing on the streets of New York, like behind a car. Being in the bike lanes and like driving into the cop cars parked in the bike lanes after he got a ticket. Just a bunch of
he seems to really get the medium.
Oh, I just have a fascination with the guy. I mean, I think he is actually one of the best like living filmmakers. Like, I think he's invented this aesthetic that I just very directly copied in doing my blog. And I mean, that was honestly like one of the main motivating factors of me even doing the blog was like, I just have watched a bunch of this guy's Casey Neistat's videos. And I was like, I could probably do that. And as I discovered, it's like, you know, like it would be the same as watching any filmmaker and being like, I could do that, which is, no, you can't. But there were some good moments. I feel like I had some good, clever little moments. But, you know, what's interesting about Casey is he creates this effortless, you're just hanging out with this guy and he's got the camera always on him. And it seems so easy and there's a sloppiness and an earnestness to it. And it's so fucking deliberate. Like, go and look at those shots and think of how mm-hmm. much work each one of those shots must be. He spends all day shooting himself like skateboarding to the store to get yogurt. It's like, you know, it's like this incredible amount of work and precision goes into it, which does bring me to, you know, probably the main complaint I have about Casey's videos and, of course, about the things that I made, which is there's very little content because what could you possibly have to say every day in a video that's that well produced? You can't. Mm-hmm. You can't have ideas in your head to talk about and a take on society or a thing you need to tell people and make a 5 to 10 minute short film with that level of polish. It cannot be done. Maybe a team of people could do it, you know, like The Daily Show or something like that, but not a YouTuber. And that was my main that was sort of what I came away with. It was like, this is like a nerd thing and it's where we all went, which was like, I immediately started obsessing over the gear and I was ordering a microphone fuzz windscreen on Amazon and like,
it's very soft.
Blowing out the like dust on my lenses that I haven't used in over a year because I don't make anything anymore as part of my job. But it was fun. Like here's what I remembered is that I love the serendipity of having the camera on when an exciting thing happens. You know, in my video number two, I was just like walking around and I saw Hickory and I pointed the camera at him and he like barked at me. And that was just like, I was like, that's awesome. Like, you can't plan that. It's just the serendipity of filming a documentary and someone says something interesting. And you just, for me, as just spending so much of my life like making little videos and stuff, like you just get a chill goes down your spine. And you're like, that was amazing. And the camera was on. And that's number one. I forgot just that simple pleasure. And number two, I love editing video. Oh my God. I really think that I may never be happier than when I'm editing video. And there's all this work you have to do. You have to get your footage and log it and cut it up and think, sit down quietly and think to yourself what story you want to tell. You have all this stuff that you need to do. It's work, 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 work. And then for me, I get to a point where I sort of know what I'm doing and I have all the clips in the bin and now it's time to fucking build the Lego spaceship. You know, just like, just like brick, brick, brick. That didn't work. Like new brick. Like go back, flip the pages back. But it's like, oh my God. Like I think that's the most pleasure I felt in months. That was a very valuable takeaway for me from this. Is like, I need to get back into editing video. Holy shit, I love editing video. And it's amazing editing video now. Oh my God, it's instant. You don't even have to wait for anything to happen. It just goes. You get to look at it right away.
Okay, so this new, all right, real quick, this new, my MacBook Pro, I the old one, it was about 4 years old, and I'm like a relatively fast editor, but it was just lagging and killing me. But this was the first time I edited, I edited a couple projects on this new laptop, and it's so fast and the rendering is so good. And I just was like melting over how it felt like a toy again.
You never have to wait. There is no rendering. It's instant. You're just mm-hmm. cut. It's like, it's like editing text. It's just like pow, pow, wow. Pow. Like as fast, like I've always had this fantasy going back to when I was in editing in high school on the Aqua Mac, you know, the shittiest iMac and iMovie, and painstakingly you'd paste a clip and you'd make a cut and you'd go get water and you'd come back and the cut had almost rendered your crossfade. Just like it would take days just to edit a little thing. And it's just, this is a fan, it's a child, it's a hoverboard, it's a laser sword, it's like, it's crazy. It's just so fast.
Well, I think at some point we've got to talk about the content, but oh my goodness. But yeah, I find these kinds of little projects, I mean, this is not something I would ordinarily talk about at length because who cares, but for the purposes of this show, I think I end up learning a little bit about myself and like where my head is, because I mean, I kept making that, I doubt you watched all of mine, but a thing I kept bringing up.
I did, I watched them.
Well, a thing I kept bringing up, which is true, is that like, I feel like this stuff has really changed. Like you talked about, Max, like how, you know, you think about, I'm my whole basic knowledge of this is probably way outdated, but I feel like, because I've been watching more YouTube lately and seeing more things, but I don't watch things that are purely about somebody's personality. Like, unlike something like a podcast, where like with most podcasts, like I'm there for the personality. Like I'm there for Elliot Kalin. I'm there for Elliot Stewart and Dan. Like I'm there for their personalities. I could give a fig about the movie they're talking about. But with these things, they are much more like I will watch an Every Frame a Painting or something like that. Something that's like about something. Or then there's all the kinds of things like, for example, trying to learn this new dingus, which I guess we all bought, which is called the Osmo Mobile. I didn't want the manual was very difficult to read and I have bad eyes. So I did something I don't normally do, which is I went to YouTube and looked at some videos and some reviews. And some of them were amazing. Like they were really, really well done. Well, I mean, there's that kind of video, right? There's the unboxings. There's the tutorials. There's the reviews. I feel like there's this whole constellation of things about like how to do cosplay, how to do makeup. I mean, aren't there tons of like makeup tutorials? Isn't that a thing?
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's like, isn't that like a pretty big thing? But like, there's not that much stuff where I would just go and like, hey guys, what I'm trying to say is that like, it takes to make anything takes a fairly monumental amount of like dumb, like just jumping off a cliff. And I don't consider myself to be like an improv person exactly, I do enjoy taking whatever just happened and going in a direction with it. And even when I'm doing that by myself, like I find that really, really fun. But that doesn't feel like it's going to be fun. It feels like it's going to be scary. And so I feel like, what, should I write something out? What am I going to do? Write a script? So I usually just have a few bullets and wing it. And again, I made myself stop doing multiple takes of this because I wanted it to be quick. But do you know what I'm saying? Like, were there things that you discovered about yourself when you were making this that were different than what you expected?
Yeah, I was watching, I sort of edited the first one and I was thinking about what can I, you know, I struggled for days just thinking about like, what can I say in a vlog? What can I even say? Like, I already feel like an asshole, like doing a podcast where I just, you know, we're like Pat, right, where we just like talk about what movies we watched or whatever bullshit is going on. You know, that's already so self-indulgent. So I was like, what more can I like say or do? And even in these three videos, and I settled on like doing, showing how I do some work, because that had the added advantage of actually the work got done, which is critical. Cause you know, we'll get into some time management questions, that I have for you guys about the vlogging, stuff. But, you know, I did the first one, which was about me editing the zine, which I have not posted publicly yet, but it'll be in the show notes of this episode. And, you know, I edited it and I thought it came out pretty good, and I finished it at, you know, 1 a.m. and then I went home and I watched it again, like over the weekend. Cause I was like, I wonder if this holds up if I watch it again. And I'm so miserable. Like, I'm so unhappy to be at work. I'm so visibly stressed out and unhappy and just resentful of having to be there and be working. And that's like that wasn't a bad day. Like, it was a fine day. Like, I had high energy and I was like getting my work done. And I actually got a lot of work done on the zine, and I shot and edited the video. So it was like a good, productive, high energy day. And like looking at it with a couple days of distance and with the objectivity of seeing it on camera, I was like, I'm not happy. Like, this is not a video of a happy person who's happy to be at work. And I really made an effort to like smile and have a little more excitement in the second video. And I think I haven't rewatched it, but I think it came across. I think it was a little less like I was just like visibly just extremely upset to be working, to be making a ton of money to work on things that I love.
it's the worst.
But what can I say? It's like, I mean, I don't know. It's like, that was a weird, that was a moment of reflection of, I was like,
yeah,
wow, this was a good day and I'm watching it on video and I look absolutely miserable. I'm just so stressed out and feeling the weight of all this and having to juggle all these things. And I was not happy. And that was a difficult thing to see.
I haven't even rewatched mine. They're very silly and dumb. And
here we go.
Man,
you were so goddamn funny, Alex.
I'm not funny. I told I'm you literally on the least funny person at this company.
I laughed out loud. Anytime you eat something that's not food, it is so funny to me. I mean, the fact that knowing just a little bit I do about you. I mean, we haven't spent a ton of time together. We've done this show, but like there must have been some part of your brain that goes like, it would be kind of funny if I tried to eat an iPhone case, and you go like, no, do not try to eat the iPhone case. And I was like, she did it. And the thing is, you were committed. You kept trying to eat the corn case, and it was so goddamn funny. And then when you got to the stickers, oh my God. And you kept eating them, and it was so funny. You don't think that's funny?
People are going to think there are many things wrong with me. Pica is not one of them.
I don't know what sort of like your school experience was like when you think back to like basically to being in like middle school and high school. But for me, I can characterize almost my entire teenage years. So sixth grade through the end of high school, completely characterized by it being 10:30 p.m. on Sunday night and me having known for nearly a week that there would be some huge amount of work due on Monday, you know, an essay for English class or like a test coming up in math class, and having been extremely anxious the preceding week where I was like nauseous and like constantly worrying about it, but having done nothing about it. And now it's 10:30 on Sunday and I'm like, well, now I can't do anything about it. And so now I also, on top of everything else, can't sleep. So I was paralyzed by anxiety and not able to do the work, or just not willing
and
to do
still,
it.
And yet still not doing it.
Right. And it wasn't like I wasn't doing the work and instead I was like racing go-karts around and smoking pot and having fun. I was miserable. I was miserable because I wasn't doing the work the whole time, right? So I was miserable that I wasn't doing the work, also not doing the work, and then miserable that I hadn't done it. And then, of course, there was like the moment of reckoning where I had to come in and explain to the teacher why it wasn't done, and they'd call my parents, and my parents would yell at me, and I'd be like, oh, no, now I've really learned my lesson, and this time I'll like become a good student and take it seriously, and then just rinse and repeat. That's my entire childhood. Boy, did this challenge really capture those emotions.
Wow.
In a very acute way for me, where I was lying in bed. You know, I was, it was like 2 a.m. and I was like lying in bed, and I was like, I had nothing to vlog about today, and I carried the camera with me all day, and I didn't turn it on, and I should have been working on it, and I really want to get this done, and it's so fucking hard, and I don't know what to do, and then I haven't done it, so the anxiety compounds. And now I powered through, and I did one bad episode and one okay episode, but I'm curious how you guys, I don't know, if that reactions, thoughts, go. Begin. Conversation begin.
All right. So I was always the kid that needed to get it done, get like school assignments or chores or whatever done right away because of that anxiety. But I found that despite it being done and despite me like fiddling with it like the entire time, rewriting stuff, I like the whole time I'd still have that anxiety. So really, I wonder if I'd be happier if I was a procrastinator. Like I did this one talk and worked on it for like a month and then rewrote it the night before, and it was probably much better than it would have been. So I'm wondering if I should fuel my anxiety in a more productive way, and maybe I should sit around and smoke pot and play Pokemon and try to be less anxious instead of finishing the work and then just being terrorized by my own mind until like the film needs to be shown or the live show is put on or whatever.
Yeah, there's a certain amount to be gained from what, like butterflies in your stomach. Like if you're about to go on stage to do a thing, you know, once you do that a bunch of times or a few times even, you start to realize that's a normal part of it. And that can be a really good thing. And that can be really stimulating. The problem is when your anxiety takes over, which happens for me a lot. Like I am a very anxious person. But I feel like there's also probably a chemical component to it. And I think one part of ADHD, and forgive me because I'm just, I don't know. But I think one thing that happens is it becomes, you lack executive function in a way that is very frustrating. It can make you angry at yourself. It can create a huge amount of anxiety. And it's something people who don't, let's just call it procrastinate. People who don't procrastinate don't understand this because it's just so weird. It's like you have this stinky bag of garbage in your house. Like, why wouldn't you take it out? That's just an analogy. But like if there's something that needs to be done and you can do it, why don't you just do it? And you're like, yeah, I know, right? And so I think sometimes for people with ADHD, I don't distinguish between ADD and ADHD. If you've got an attention problem that involves dopamine, I think there's a thing that happens, which is that you have to get up to a certain level of dopamine that can be a very, very tight window for any kind of efficacy. And you need to be in that window for something to happen. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, if you can imagine, it's got like a certain floor and a certain ceiling. Nothing's going to happen until you get up to this one level. But if you get up to this level, oh boy, now you're going to have problems. It's sort of like coffee in some ways. And so I think a thing happens sometimes with people, and certainly with me, which is like, I realize in retrospect that I don't like that procrastinating. I don't like that putting off. But something has to get near panic before I do something sometimes. And I don't like it, and I don't know exactly why it is, but I think it's a thing. I think for some people, and then so on top of that, now imagine like Max or me, presumably, if that's your MO for 5, 10, 30 years, is it surprising that that's become like how you behave without having to think about it? And even though you don't like it, it's the devil you know. And you know that like once the panic really hits you, then you get something accomplished. And suddenly you get 3 to 5 things done. Because my theory is you've hit this certain window of dopamine that came from that panic.
Merlin, you have a blog post that I love that I like try to remember to like repost it almost every year around this time. So it's getting to be about time. But hopefully we can find it and put it in the show notes. But it's about why New Year's resolutions are bullshit. And the reason is, you know, this is your reasoning, but you're like, you know, the calendar year changing in a sequential fashion is not actually like an inherently like great reason or motivation to make a major life change sort of suddenly and arbitrarily and go from 0 to 100. So actually, by setting these huge grandiose New Year's resolutions every year and then trying really hard and hating yourself for not accomplishing them, the muscle that you're exercising every year is just sucking harder and harder until you have, I believe, as you put it, a big old scrotum of anger and shame. And that is, you know, I think about that all the time. It's a, you know, it's a reason I've gotten out of the habit of setting New Year's resolutions, because I agree it's mostly just building a muscle for sucking in more and more intense ways. But, you know, mind, I never learned how to manage my time. I never learned how to, maybe it's almost a Buddhist thing of to say, oh, I am having anxiety right now, but I'm nonetheless, I'm going to sit down and refocus my mind and dedicate myself to the work at hand. I never learned that skill, and I never sort of attempted to seek out any sort of like medicinal remedy or anything. So I just have this muscle I've built of waiting until a last minute panic and then either pulling the project out of the fire or not. And I guess, you know, to take this sort of like macro view of what you could call my career, I've pulled it out of the fire in a last-minute panic with enough quality, enough that, well, here we are, and there's a company that I've helped make, but also I have not pulled it out of the fire enough that there's a long trail of disappointed people in my wake.
I don't want to, like, romanticize mental illness. That's one thing, and I try not to define myself by the whole bipolar thing, but, like, I can't deny that a lot of my best work has been a result of not mania, because that's no fun, but like just hypomanic episodes where the focus, it's like, let's say I have tried Ritalin, it basically feels like that, and like there's nothing in the world more important than the work, and everything is the work, and you're just like, your mind is laser focused, and
it's all, you feel like you can't not do it.
Yeah and there's like a, and the thing is, like, there's this anxiety with it that is like the opposite of procrastination. Like you said, you have to do it, but then you just feel fucking great doing it. And I feel like the only time I procrastinate is when, like, that depression hits. And then that's when I'm pulling things out of the fire. That's when the pile of cat toys don't get put away.
I'm familiar with that sort of manic feeling of just being consumed by this project in a euphoric energy, and then you finish it and you're sort of done, and I always have this moment of like, I don't know what to do with my life, and then I'll just sort of stare into the distance and I'll be like, I should start a newspaper.
Yeah, and if you don't do something right away, you hate yourself.
Why don't I live on a sailboat?
I could totally do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could start a vlog.
Yeah, right. Yeah, fucking Casey Neistat? Oh, what's that guy got to say? I could do that. Why don't I do that? Those should be my faves. He's got my faves.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's you got to find a sweet spot sometimes for different sorts of things. And I get what you're saying, Alex. It's I've always been, well, as I got older, I'll say, I became very put off by the romanticization, especially by proxy, of different kinds of mental things. Like, you know, like when you're younger and you're into rock and roll and you go like, oh man, those guys are the worst drunks. They're the coolest. Or man, Vincent Van Gogh, he blew his brains out. And it's like, that's not really something you want to like, I don't know. Did he have to have that particular condition in order to make what he made? Well, who knows? But like, I don't know. I always feel like that's a little bit, as I get older, I become a little more squicked out by that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I can't deny what you guys are talking about, which is like, you know, when you're in a flow state, that comes out of some kind of feeling of like the world melting away. Things that used to be sort of invasive thoughts are gone and you're just doing the thing. You're not even thinking about doing the thing. And that's such an amazing feeling. And I think that of like all the sorts of highs where I end up chasing the dragon, that's a big one. It's like, how do I get to do a thing where I disappear into what I'm doing? And then the days that you have it, the mornings you have it, like you feel invincible, you know, pharmaceutically or otherwise. I mean, just if you're like with Max in your video editing, you're like, there's nothing else I could be doing now that would like make me happier than to sit here and just be completely disappearing into what I'm doing.
Well, you see the Matrix for that for an hour, and you're just, yeah, like, and nothing can stop you. You can just the problems arise and you just like go into the source code and all the bullets like come falling to the floor and you're just like, I'm unstoppable. Like I'm in a state of flow and I'm the master of this project. And then inevitably you crash and there's like two movies of watching Keanu's ass and a weird trippy robot battles.
The cartoon was good. I enjoyed that
one.
Oh
my god, I'm so lost. What do you think about that Osmo Mobile though? Isn't that a piece of work?
I'm wondering if this is just like an elitist thing, but like as the internet is sort of shrinking, and I feel like the three of us sort of are fighting the whole just trying to keep podcasts as independent as possible. But it feels like there's really no place on the internet that feels like home anymore.
I've been thinking about that a lot, actually.
Yeah, and for a lot of people for a very long time, and still like folks who've been on YouTube forever, like that's their home and that's where their community is, and that's Reddit for some people, that's Tumblr for some people, but more and more, I don't know, like it was like Twitter was my home for almost a decade now, and I don't know, there's like no fun place on the internet where I can hang out with my friends, it feels like.
I mean, some slacks sometimes, depends mm-hmm. on who's there, depends on who's posting a lot. I think a lot of times a Slack is going to be governed by who the person is that always feels the need to leave the last comment all the time. But that can be great. I mean, I think that medium is still really good, but I know I feel very much the same way. I'm a privileged person for many reasons, but one way is that like Twitter has not been the total dumpster fire for me that it is for a lot of people. So I want to just bracket that. But with that said, I mean, not to talk about the election, but like I was saying to my wife last night, I realized one reason I'm kind of a sad tomato sometimes these days is that like a lot of the stuff that used to make me happy, either as a source of information or purely as a diversion or as useful for what I do, like almost all of that, I feel like I've lost it. Mm-hmm. Like listening to NPR is not fun to me anymore. Looking at Google News makes me very, very sad right now. So you see where I'm going with this. Looking mm-hmm. at Twitter is rough. I mean, but then I tried to kind of trace that, where that was coming from. And you know, first of all, it is like, it's like you're saying, Alex, I mean, we all change. These things need to make money. All that changes. But I've also had this terrible feeling I've been fighting for some time now, which is that like, I am so overwhelmed by and sick of people talking about Donald Trump. Let me stipulate, like, I'm just really fucking tired of it. I'm tired of him being in my life. And yet he's more in my life every day. And I hate that. Just as a person, I hate that. But looking at anything else feels frivolous. Mm-hmm. And it makes me sad. There's not that many things that I lose myself in where there isn't some kind of little fucking pumpkin whack-a-mole game where this guy's going to just fucking pop up somewhere in my world. And it's the new Godwin's law. It's like once we start talking about this, nobody's happy anymore. But to not talk about it feels inconsequential.
First of all, that is hits the nail exactly on the head of how I'm feeling since the election. Mm-hmm. I think when I think a lot about the community of people that I really like on the internet, you know, it's people who are independent, creative, people who make stuff. And, you know, when they do podcasts or when they're like posting on Twitter, like people are kind of thinking about this question of like, what's a good life? Like, you know, how do you balance like the using technology and, you know, the things you talk about, Merlin, like time and attention to have a good life for yourself. And, you know, I think we were in the last couple decades, we've been living in this time where, you know, that seemed like an important question, like having a good, you know, figuring out how to lead a good life, how to have a, like in philosophy, philosophy you'd call that like having a good household, right? Like your household affairs, or, you know, you just like your personal sort of like, you know, like ethical and consumer choices and things like that. They seem really important. You know, like it's like what you and Gruber were talking about that episode of the talk show of like, you know, can you believe that just yesterday people were arguing about the travel distance of the keys on the new MacBook Pro? Like, right. That seemed to be a consuming important topic in the discourse. And nobody asked for a democratic, like a constitutional crisis that's going to require actions of compromise and ethics and courage and possibly life or death decisions. Like, nobody asked for that in society. No one asked to be living in the 1930s where, you know, the government might come after your neighbors and you're going to have to make some tough ethical decisions of like, what do you and your family do about that? I no one wants that. No one was like that. That's how I'll prepare to lead my life. It sounds crazy. I mean, not even Trump thought that he was going to win. I mean, honestly, right? Because he's scrambling to, he didn't hire anyone. He's scrambling to fill his transition out. But it's a grim time, and it's a time of darkness and dumbness in the culture, and everyone's going to have to recalibrate a little bit. And some of the dumb, frivolous things that we thought were important and we thought were going to be these big questions in our lifetime, like what's the future of Apple's product line, may be understood in a new context. And that's just human. Most of human existence on this planet to this date has followed this pattern. So in retrospect, you know, of like, people get pretty comfortable and then things get shaken up and, you know, you start to prioritize in your life. That's sort of a pattern in human history. And, you know, especially in, you know, the Jewish history that I learned growing up, it's like, oh my God, like people are constantly telling you like, hey, don't get too comfortable. Cause like you're, you know, someone's going to come after you and you're going to have to get pack up and move. And you'd be like, yeah, okay, grandpa. But, you know, here we are. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I've heard like, Ecuador is a nice place to live.
Ireland's pretty great. It's nice. There's very few people there. Just sheep.
New Zealand's nice too.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this is why I'm putting off watching the season finale of Westworld, because I won't have anything to obsess over and distract myself with until like 2018.
Well, there's a pretty good chance that once you do watch it, your first impulse is going to be to start over again.
Yeah. It's almost like, yeah.
Absolutely. In a way that is not annoying, but you're going to go, oh, brother.
Is it?
So stop listening to us and go watch the guy. Get yourself a Comet ping pong pizza and sit down and watch this program.
Mm-hmm. I just want it to be like the end of The Prestige. God, I love that movie so much.
That's a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Max made us all
have
sad.
Sorry, I'll tell you another frustrating thing. I have a similar feeling of not having a home online. There have been various communities where I even knew at the time, even when I was a kid and I found a little home for myself online, you know, a forum or somewhere where I really belonged and I knew what was what and who is who. I even knew at the time I would stop and think to myself, oh my God, this rules. This is so cool. Everyone's here talking and it's this amazing, like, I can't believe I'm a part of this. And it's like, I'm right here in the town square talking about the ideas of the day with the people, you know, the people I like, my people. And I felt that about Twitter 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. I thought to myself, oh my God, like, this is, can you believe that I'm just on this website and I can just talk to all these people and it's like, it's all here. And I think one of the depressing things is like the way that the culture is tearing itself apart and the left is tearing itself apart right now. Like, I truly feel that I don't have a home because I certainly don't fit in with the Trump people. I mean, that's not even an option on the table of like going to like, I don't know, 4chan or whatever, wherever the fucking anime Nazis hang out. I'm not going on their forums. But you know, I don't even feel that I fit in on the places where my friends talk about politics. I'm repulsed by the way that they talk about politics and it scares me. And I find it like, I find the people that I respect, I think they're like, I have such contempt for the dialogue that they have around politics. You know, I woke up this morning and I went on Twitter as I do now just to find out what horror show is playing itself out in real time on my phone. And everyone was fucking furious, just shitting all over Time magazine for making Donald Trump a man, you know, person of the year.
And that's what the title means. It doesn't mean nice guy of the year. It means the person had the biggest impact on the news.
So that's part of it, is like half the people were like, how dare they? We should write a petition. And the other half were like,
change.org.
And the other half were like, actually, Hitler was the man of the year. So actually, you're wrong. Yeah. So it's like, it's both sides. But just to take a step back, like, what does it fucking matter? Like, it's a symbolic, like, what do you hope to accomplish? Like, he's the man of the year or he's not the man of the year. Take your pick. You can have it however you want. That's your battle. Like, we're going to die on this hill.
Max, don't normalize this.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like,
are you normalizing this? Stop normalizing this.
Like, can we not? Can does every victory that we seek have to be symbolic?
And just, you know, cut all of this out. But like, what is the deal with taking everything that clearly did not win the election and doubling down on everything? It's like, can we just take a minute to learn what didn't work and have a moment of self-examination about what we might have gotten wrong? What if we all just agreed there's at least one thing we all got wrong, and why don't we try to figure that out before we go straight back to getting petitions out? It's like,
I'll tell you what's the problem is, Merlin, is during the election, we did not make it clear enough to America that if you support Donald Trump, you are a racist, a sexist, a homophobe, and a bad person.
Do you think if they got that message more often, they would have voted differently?
I think that we were not, I don't think that aggressively that we told people what bad people they were for thinking the things that they think and believing the things they believe. And if we could just reach them and tell them and just have a dialogue wherein we tell them that they are racist and they have so much to learn from us, that I really think we could break through. And I feel that we really need to rededicate ourselves to this message, because it's just wasn't enough.
I found it's been very effective for me. When people tell me that I'm something that I think I'm not over and over again, usually from strangers, you better believe I'm going to change, buddy. I'm sorry. You know, I owe you an amends. I didn't realize that I was a bad person. I will change my opinion.
There was really no universal avatar filter for this election.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
I mean, the key thing is that also, if anyone is willing to compromise with us or come over to our side or meet us in the middle, we have to excoriate them, because I don't feel that they fully understand how bad they've been in the past.
Oh, we sound like Popeye's father in the movie. You owe me an apology. You owe me an apology. Like, that's me. That's the entire fucking internet. Is Olive Oil's dad with his pointy hair and his glasses going, you owe me an apology.
I just have one statement more to make, which is I've bought progressively more expensive Osmos trying to get the right feature set, and none of them are better than the entry-level one that uses the iPhone.
That's what I suggested. Mm-hmm.
This...
But like, why? Fuck. Like, this one still doesn't
you
do all the shit that I want.
You bought the camera one, too?
What?
Did you buy the camera one? The one that has the camera built in?
Yes.
He has purchased two of those.
I bought one.
That's like $600.
I bought one and it didn't have all the features. So then I realized I had to buy more expensive ones. And now I have two.
But you got to make a vlog. You need the right equipment.
Yeah. I mean, I have still one more episode to make. Maybe.
I actually ordered the Osmo Plus for Max, and you can have it hand delivered for free. But they're like, please.
Isn't everything that's delivered hand delivered? I mean,
what's the deal? You park in the driveway, you drive on the parkway.
Yeah. What's that? What everything on airplanes is so small. Small seats, small food, small drinks. What's up with that?
You ever notice how weird malls are? What's the deal with cars? Who's using these things?
Did you know that men in uniform? Oh God, stolen valor videos, Max.
Oh
God,
Max, did you find out if you're stealing valor?
Here's what I learned from Twitter, which is just where putting my grandpa's patch on my jacket is not stealing valor. However, I do intend to use it to get free movie tickets, and that is stealing valor. So, but you know, free movie tickets. So.
Challenge. This week it's Alex. Alex, what are you going to bring us this week?
You need to train your cat to sit.
Oh my God.
Merlin, I'm not actually sure that your cat's alive. I've been afraid to ask.
She's got a lot of problems. We stopped shaving her. and she is such a monstrosity now. She's gotten very broad, and her whatever's wrong with her like immune system sneezing has gotten a lot worse, and also she's kind of filthy right now. This is her infinitely trying to clean herself.
She's got some mats, but you know, she's a long-haired cat. Do you brush her?
Yeah, kind of. We mostly shave her, and that counts as brushing. But she's got knots like crazy. We got to have the crazy cat lady come and do her up again. Oh boy, that lady's got opinions about what we do. She's got her own van. She comes out in a van.
She's like, yeah, well, okay, if I use your hose to refill the truck.
Yeah, sure, fine.
Well, there's a couple things here. You're going to need this kind of number 7 brush, and you're going to, you really need to get in there.
All right, so let's make this a sort of dual challenge.
Cut all that out.
You need to keep your cat alive.
She's fine. She's old. She's like 10 years old. She sleeps all day. She's fine. And then she comes and she crawls on my wife's lap and gets petted for like 2 hours. She's a very happy cat.
Does she do playtime?
Oh, like monkey time where she acts all crazy?
Yeah. Like her kitten
time. Monkey times. Monkey time is the time of day when a child acts completely insane and you can't stop them. She has two monkey times. She has a monkey time in the morning when she jumps up and gets scared by things that aren't there and goes down the hall for no reason. And then goes, meow, 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 meow. She used to be 4, then it was 6, and now we're up to 12 sometimes that she does that. And then sometimes she sleeps all day.
Can I make a suggestion, Alex? Did you see the Kickstarter for the cat brush that attaches to your tongue?
Yeah. I almost...
Can we get through those in time for the challenge?
Let me see if the cat...
Because I feel that would really help us all commune with our animals.
Yeah.
Did it fail? I don't order now.
Oh, ooh, hell
wait,
yeah.
Wait, let's see. Oh,
remember, that's
boy.
Not sweet, Alex.
You know, it's just
going in the mouth. How much does it going to be cost for all of us to lick our cats clean?
I don't know if you can. Okay, or order now. Let's see if this is actually
call him. Get him up. Get him on the blower.
On the horn. Hello. Can I speak with the cat licking people, please? Hello, this is Max Devon calling you from Chicago. I'm going to need 3 of these. Stop. Oh. Come at me. Quick, buddy.
Guys, the licky brush, if we order this by December 9th, we are guaranteed, it's guaranteed to ship by December 12th. Damn it.
Get it anyway. Do it.
Oh, for $3, you can also get a lick your cat sticker.
Is it edible?
No. Okay.
What would happen if Mel came home and you were licking the cat with that brush in your mouth?
the cat looking just a little bit panicked. Oh God, she's taking it out of the cat. Wow, and then there's the lack thing.
Okay,
I feel so the lack.
I feel so close to you. I feel like we're really bonding.
You can tell she really loves it. What have I done? What have I done to bring you to this space? You want me to put on some music?